This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. The Naples Lions Club is setting for itself an ambitious goal, eradicating lazy eye. We'll talk with the ophthalmologist about how they plan to do it. But first, since Hurricane Irma hit southwest Florida last week, officials in Hendry County say they have been handing out, on average, a couple of semi-trucks of food and water per day. They're also giving away ice, tarps, and other necessities at the Dallas B. Townsend Agricultural Center in La Belle. More than 50 volunteers from across the state and beyond are lending a hand. And yesterday, WGCU's Jessica Mazzaro spoke with Hendry County residents who are receiving donations about life after Irma.
My name is Michael Nolan.
So are you from Hendry County?
No, I'm from Lehigh.
Lehigh?
Yeah, I work right down at La Belle Ford.
What are you getting today in terms of donations?
I'm just getting as much water and as food as I can until we get our power turned back on. Hopefully they said it'll be today, so we're hoping. So.
What's this hurricane been like for you?
I don't know if I can say it, but hell. It's just horrible. We're going on day 10 with no electricity, and all the water we can get, it's going just fast as we can get it in.
And what about in stores and stuff? Is it hard to get water there?
It's not really that hard to get. I mean, it's starting to come back, but the thing is, you know, all the money we spent preparing for Irma, you know, when, you know, we live paycheck to paycheck, so just preparing for the storm really, you know, really threw us back, and then not working, and... But we're trying to do our best, so.
What's your name?
Carlos Aguilar.
How old are you?
8.
Do you live in Hendry County?
Yes.
And what has the Hurricane Irma been like for you and your family?
Bad.
Why is that?
Because it flooded my house and we have no power.
Wow, and so you're getting food and water from this place? Is it? That's a good thing, right?
Yes.
Do you still don't have power?
No.
Okay, so where are you guys staying? You're still at home even though it's flooded?
No, our house not flooded. We stay with our cousins, my cousin.
What is your full name?
Sergio Beltran.
And what do you do?
Oh, I work in agriculture on a blueberry farm.
And what kinds of supplies are you getting here today?
Oh, it looks like they're giving us ice, water, and just a case of basic snacks, I guess.
Is food and water hard to come by elsewhere, if not for this donation center?
Kind of. You know, the stores were having hard to stock, especially ice. We was without water, I mean, electricity for more 7 days, so we couldn't have any resource of getting ice. It was a little hard to find ice, especially since we got kids.
And how many kids do you have?
Oh, 3. Yeah.
And how are they doing?
Oh, they're doing great now.
And so do you think you'll have to come back here again, or are you hoping you get power back?
I hope we get power back. You know, it's been a little pain, but...
What has this hurricane been like for you?
Oh, for me, my wife, a little stressful. Not used to being on a storm, especially with the city in Florida, you know.
Anna, press. Right now, I picked us a hamburger that I'm going to grill.
And how is your home right now? How's your home situation?
It's getting a little better.
Do you have power?
Yeah, we barely got power back yesterday.
You live in Hendry somewhere?
Yes, across the bridge, in La Belle.
And how long will this food last to you, do you think?
We'll see. A week, maybe.
Do you get to go back to work, or is work closed?
Work is closed right now.
Yeah. And until when, do you know?
I don't know. Yeah, they haven't called me.
And so this food is kind of like helping you out during this time?
Oh, yeah, it's helping me a lot.
Yeah. And you have your son here?
Yeah.
Is it his birthday? I saw balloons.
My daughter's.
Oh, your daughter's?
Yeah.
What is it like to have her birthday during this hurricane?
Well, we didn't make a party for her or nothing. I just bought her balloons and I'm going to try to bake a cake.
That was WGCU reporter Jessica Mazzaro speaking with Hendry residents Michael Nolan, Carlos Aguilar, Sergio Beltran, and Ana Perez. Tuesday was the last day that donation center operated in that location, and Hendry officials are now moving donations and distributions to the Emergency Operations Center warehouse, which is located 840 Kennedy Boulevard in La Belle. Items that are still needed include things for babies like formula, diapers, and wipes. Throughout southwest Florida, people struggling without power, water, or enough to eat are finding some free hot meals at a few places. Here's a partial list. In Lehigh Acres, the middle school and North Fort Myers Academy for the Arts are serving dinner today and tomorrow from 5:30 to 7 p.m. They're also doing lunch tomorrow from 11:30 to 1. Tortuga Elementary School in Lehigh Acres is serving a midday meal at 1 o'clock today through Friday. And another in Lehigh, St. Raphael's Catholic Church off of Lee Boulevard is selling Johnsonville brats until 2 today. Any donations they collect are going toward Hurricane Irma relief. And last week we talked about Mercy Chefs, which is working with the Convoy of Hope in Estero. That group is still camped out in front of Living Waters Church at 41 and Williams Road across the street from the Hertz headquarters. They'll be serving their last dinner there free of charge tonight from 5 to 7 p.m. We also have a full rundown of distribution sites if you're looking for food, water, ice, or even pet food. You can check that out on our Facebook at WGCU Public Media and on Twitter and Instagram. This weekend, WGCU's Rachel Iacovone covered Governor Rick Scott's visit to Everglades City, and while there, she met people who were carrying their homes in pieces to try and relocate. Here's her story.
The small community is known for its airboat rides and fishing spots, and now for taking some of the worst of Hurricane Irma's wrath. Governor Rick Scott stopped by Sunday afternoon to survey the damage.
The water's still really high here. But listen to them talk about how much they got into their homes. That's how much work it's going to be to get this stuff cleaned up. It's going to be a significant issue with housing.
As the governor walked the damp and debris-lined streets of Everglades City, thousands of people in the area were still without power, and many, now, are without a home. One of them is Jordan Mayberry. The 31-year-old mother of two spent her Sunday taking the insides of her new home, piece by piece, to the curb.
We just finished it exactly the way we wanted it. We just put up the fence. We just put in a new pool and the garage and the backsplash and the tiles, every single thing that you can walk in the house and see that's visible to the eye.
Mayberry looks away toward the pieces of her new fence laying across her muddy backyard.
I'm sorry.
She wipes tears from her eyes.
It took us 3 years, paycheck to paycheck, getting everything exactly the way we wanted it. We just put in our plantation shutters that I picked up a season job just to get those.
Mayberry works as a neurological nurse at Naples Community Hospital. Her husband is a firefighter. Both of their jobs required them to work during Hurricane Irma. After the storm, the two came home to discover the 10-foot storm surge had flooded their raised house up to the electrical outlets, destroying almost everything inside.
The first day that I came in to clean everything out, I didn't wear a mask. And just that one day of wearing no mask, it hurt to swallow that night.
Mayberry says she sees and smells mold growing in their home since the water receded. Her neighbors are complaining of similar respiratory issues as they clean up as well, while others are becoming severely ill in Irma's wake. Published reports say Everglades City resident Lee Martini died of respiratory failure and internal bleeding Saturday. David Curry had his leg amputated Friday after it was critically infected by the dirty water. Mayberry says, despite her losses, she is grateful to have her family, both her literal family and the family she's gained since moving to Everglades City from her native Naples 3 years ago.
We lost our homes, but we found humanity. Everglades City is a very close community. It's a small town.
A complete stranger slows and calls to her and her neighbors from his car, offering to do their laundry for free.
See what I'm saying?
Rachel joins us now in the studio to talk about what she saw around town in Everglades City. Rachel, thanks for coming in.
Yeah, hi. Thanks, Julie.
That was really a heartbreak hearing that story.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy covering it, talking to this woman as she's bawling her eyes out and sitting in kind of the rubble of her home.
Yeah, it's just it's devastating to hear that. And then, you know, this morning in the Naples Daily News is a report that the bacteria in the receding floodwaters were, quote, too numerous to count. And now that this water continues to recede, are people there concerned about the silt and muck that was left behind, or are they just still on autopilot trying to clean up as much as they can?
I think everyone kind of had that glazed over look, you know. They're picking up pieces of their homes, and so their biggest concern was the water still. In some areas, it still hadn't receded. In the one woman I spoke to, the water was gone, but it left this caking of like salt on the walls, kind of salt water. So her big concern was getting that out of the house at first, and her house was still standing. It was just that everything in it had been ruined. But then in her case and in many cases, the front of their homes were now sinking because the front was the wood that was holding it up. And so their concern is more, are they going to have a home at all? Not necessarily maybe the muck left behind.
Yeah, it's just devastating. And these houses with all the mold in them, it seems like – I've been to Everglades City a number of times. It seems like it's very small. And if one house there got hit with water, probably all of them got hit. Did it seem like every single house – I know you didn't go around and count them all, but did it seem like pretty much all of them got hit with water?
Yeah, and I didn't see every house, like you said, but I did make circles to kind of assess that. And there is the same situation everywhere you were seeing. Some of them are stilt homes, so you did see those were in better condition. But a lot of the stilt homes keep their boats right below that deck. And a lot of the boats were overturned or in somebody else's yard, and they had a lot of damage to those. And the stilts themselves had been hit by a lot of rubble.
Yeah, and compromised in some way or another when things are floating. They don't really move around for stilts in the way. Is there a shelter there in Everglades City operating?
No, I asked and I couldn't get a clear answer on that. There are some distribution centers, it sounds like, but no clear shelter.
And there's no temporary housing that you saw that was being set up?
No. As you heard in the story, when I talked to Governor Rick Scott, his big concern was housing. You know, he said this is the issue that we really need to approach even before power, because if they had a set housing system, then they could have generators running those.
Yeah. Well, they're getting some power back. I think that you checked. I know you're following Immokalee and Everglades City, and you're staying on both of those stories. So you said that there is some power restored already?
Right. So in the case of Immokalee, they're doing a little better. Last report I saw was about 50%, and LCEC says for Everglades City as of last night at about 5 p.m., they had restored about 25% of power. But that still leaves 75% of the area without power.
Without power and without a place to go. There's not a shelter nearby, and there aren't places that are set up for people to get out of those moldy homes.
No, and the governor didn't even have an answer for what they could do in that area.
Yeah, I don't understand why there's a lot of talk, but there's not a lot of
everything's
things happening.
Damaged.
And you went into one of these homes. What did it smell like and what did your lungs feel like afterwards?
Honestly, I stayed to the doorway because we weren't even sure about the structural integrity of it. But even that, it's – you can smell mold. It smells – and it smelled like seawater, a lot of it. So it kind of smelled like you were – something had been rotting, you know, a dead carcass of something on the
oh,
beach.
You know, like when they have those little tide pools that happen when
exactly.
When it gets caught in the beach in that little low spot, that kind of cooking there.
Right. And at the time, it just smelled gross. But the next day, I woke up and you can probably hear it in my voice a little bit, maybe compared to even my story's voicing, that it's been rough on my throat, you know, and I've been having some breathing problems. I cannot even imagine what it'd be like living in those homes still, breathing that in all the time. She complained of the respiratory problems, and many of her neighbors were as well.
Is she staying there? Is she staying at her damaged home or is she staying somewhere else?
No, she's actually staying a little bit more inland. Her in-laws live out there, and so that was a safe space for her and her two children.
Well,
her
that's
husband.
Lucky, but, you know, not a lot of people have that.
Yeah, and that's exactly what she said as well, and she really felt for all her neighbors.
Yeah, I'm really glad you're going to be following up on that story. We'll look forward to future reports, Rachel. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
The first place the storm made landfall was the Florida Keys, mainly in the lower Keys. And shortly after, we talked with reporter Nancy Klinginger with WLRN. Since then, she put together this compilation of her experiences since the storm.
It's a week after Hurricane Irma hit the Keys, and people who evacuated were just allowed to return to Key West and the rest of the lower Keys. While Key West was largely spared, the lower Keys took the full force of the Category 4 storm. Some people never left, and they've spent the last week in a blur, preparing, surviving, and then navigating the weird post-Irma world. I'm one of them, and this is my letter from Key West. As Irma was coming at the Keys, I actually managed to get a couple hours of sleep. This was surprising, since the wind was already rattling the air vents in the room where I was settled on an air mattress with my husband and our dog, but essential, because I had not slept at all the night before. I woke up around 3:30, went on the radio, and started reorganizing my stuff. Again. The day before, I'd reduced my life to 4 bags. Now, it was down to 1, the 1 bag I could take into the stairwell in case the windows blew out. We still had cell service somehow, so we watched as Irma's eye aimed at the Keys just to the east of us. At least that put us on the less dirty side of the storm. And it was coming in at low tide. Another blessing. The building felt solid. You could feel it buffet from the gusts, but it wasn't like the sway I've felt in an old wooden conch house in much lesser winds. In late morning, after the worst had passed, we looked around. The water never reached us in Old Town Key West. There were some big trees down, but most buildings that hadn't been hit by one of them looked okay. We knew Irma's eye had passed to our east, but didn't know which areas were worst hit. Within a day or two, we found out. It was the Lower Keys. That's where Anthony Attilio was. I met Attilio on Thursday on Big Pine Key, about 30 miles east of Key West. He was at work at the Winn-Dixie.
I was in a trailer at the end of Avenue C.
And what happened?
trailer blew apart around 6 in the morning. We lost one wall, then the roof and the other wall. Me and my roommate were hanging on to a pole outside, said our goodbyes because we didn't think we were going to make it. But we did, and we came up here.
Attilio knew some of his coworkers were spending the storm inside the Winn-Dixie. He waded through the receding storm surge and made it to the store. He's been working there nonstop ever since. Big Pine took the brunt of Irma.
I'm from here. My family's from here. I'm a lifelong resident, and it was just shocking, sad to see everything. Everything that I know growing up here is gone. Nothing looks the same and never will. And it's really upsetting. But we'll rebuild. We're conks. We're tough. We'll rebuild. Everything will be okay.
Some of the biggest challenges right after the storm were navigation and communication. Navigation because almost every street was blocked by trees or big branches. A lot of them had lines of some kind drooped across, low enough to catch on your car or even your nose. Communication because everyone wanted to let our loved ones know we were alive, and of course power and cell service were knocked out. On Sunday, I got a quick phone call through to an editor in Miami thanks to a friend with a satellite modem. We made it through to our house and found it unscathed, though our yard was an impenetrable tangle of fishtail palms and mahogany branches. A week later, it still is. We just removed enough to give us access and figured the rest can wait until we have 911 and better medical services. So yeah, the medical services. In the days after the storm, that felt like the sketchiest and scariest part of our situation. All of us who stayed did so at our own risk. Communications were down, so there was no way to summon help. People who needed medical assistance showed up in person at the fire stations. Someone even showed up at US 1 Radio, the only station that was able to stay on the air, and they put out the call for help. Some of us remembered about landlines, true landlines, not the kind installed now that need internet service to work. A friend has a small hotel that was in really good shape after the storm. And Sunday evening, we figured out that they had a fax line we could use to call out. That was my first connection to report back to the mainland. Getting around is still an issue. I'm always careful riding my bike around the island, but now I'm riding super defensively. I made my priorities personal safety, then journalism. That means staying hydrated, avoiding getting overheated, remembering to eat on a regular basis. Power returned for some of us amazingly fast. We got ours on Thursday. But water has been a problem in the Lower Keys, with a boil water notice, and in Key West at least, a couple hours during the day when we can shower and flush toilets. For some people, that initial period was just too much. When my husband and I were heading up to Big Pine Key on Thursday, we passed two women walking along the overseas highway on Big Coppet Key.
There's no other way out. No way out, so we're going to walk.
We pulled over and met Stacy Young and Cherie Pruitt. They were walking to the mainland from Key West. Even in good conditions, that's a three-hour drive.
Right now, there's still no lights, no power. It is coming on little by little, but water comes on twice a day. I can't do that. I have too many health problems to stay there, and it's too hot. Can't come out after it gets dark. So, no. I'll be back when it's put back together.
Young and Pruitt each had a rolling case, one for water and food, one for clothes. Young had her medications for asthma, high blood pressure, and a bad knee. She had a bike light on her cane, and she was carrying a bag with her Yorkshire Terrier, Gucci. We gave them a ride to Big Pine Key. We offered to drop them at the station where the National Guard was giving out food and water, but they wanted to head up the road. Young's daughter had ridden out on a motorcycle earlier in the day to meet up with Young's mother in South Dade.
I know my daughter, she halfway made it, so yeah. So she probably up there just sitting waiting for us.
Thank you.
All right, take care. Bye-bye. Be careful.
We last saw them rolling their cases toward the Spanish Harbor Bridge, which goes from Big Pine Key towards Marathon. We were hoping other people would give them rides along the way. I emailed Young to see if they made it out okay, but as of Sunday afternoon, had not heard from her. I'm Nancy Klingener in Key West.
Nancy, we've just listened to your heartbreaking account of life right after the storm. It was filed this past weekend, but have things changed much since this piece came out?
In Key West, it's like night and day. You know, I'm sitting here in my house with power, with Wi-Fi. The water is on 24/7, although we're still under a boil water notice. My garbage got picked up this morning, just like on its regular schedule. So life in Key West is starting to feel very, very close to normal, except there's an awful lot of tree debris in the streets that piled up, ready to be taken away.
And you said that the airport is opening for commercial flights already today?
That's right. They opened the Key West Airport today. They lifted the checkpoint yesterday, so anybody can come down to the Keys. They're not checking to see if you have a local ID. They do have the areas that have the worst damage in the lower Keys between, say, Big Coppet and Big Pine Key, and some in the middle Keys and Marathon. They have those areas blocked off with checkpoints so that not just anybody can get into there. So they are protected. But the Keys as a whole are open.
So, well, and open for business is good because people can get back to work, and then also there's a big event coming up in October.
That's right. I mean, a lot of people in the Keys, especially those who work in the tourism industry, really rely on that income. It's paycheck to paycheck. They need the tips. They need the salary they get from working at restaurants or hotels or other services. And in October, late October, we have our biggest event of the year here in Key West called Fantasy Fest. So I'm sure they're really pushing to be open and fully operational by then.
And have everything ready to go for that. And then you mentioned that the lower Keys, the part that was hardest hit, they're still not back to normal?
Oh, no. There's a lot of people there who have either their entire homes, mobile homes, some other structures, boats, destroyed, completely uninhabitable. Others are going to need a lot of work. They had major roof damage, water in the house. So there's a lot of work to be done in the Lower Keys.
And what kind of businesses are there in the Lower Keys? Is it also tourism-driven?
It's tourism-driven, but it's a lot more rural. There's a lot of national wildlife refuge land up there, the key deer you might have heard of. And there's fishing, backcountry, flat skies fishing, and diving charters, and some small hotels.
And I don't know if you've had a chance to look into it yet at all, but how about the impact on the little key deers that everybody loves so much? Has there been anybody that's been able to ascertain whether they were impacted by this storm?
I don't know the extent of the impact, but they're definitely still around. I saw one last week that was sort of sheltering in the shade under a house on Big Pine Key. And the Refuge Service actually put out a notice on social media, I think it was yesterday, asking people to put out fresh water for the deer and the other wildlife, since salt water had intruded into a lot of the freshwater lenses that they normally use.
Well, that's a little spot of good news.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the mood overall kind of sounds like it's, you know, at once heartbroken but still optimistic. Is that kind of the norm in the Keys? Is that kind of the personality of the people that live there?
Yeah, I mean, it sort of depends on how much you lost and how prepared you are to get through it. So there's a lot of the we will rebuild, we'll help each other spirit for sure. There's a lot of people, though, who are exhausted, heartbroken, looking at a long, hot recovery process. So a lot of us who are in the better-off areas are trying to do what we can to help those, you know, our friends, our neighbors who live in the Lower Keys and they have lost a lot.
You're a longtime resident in Key West, right? So, I mean, you've seen your share of storms. Is this one different in the way that people are reacting?
Yeah, this is by far the most catastrophic I've seen. The closest was probably Hurricane Wilma in 2005. That sent a big storm surge across a lot of the Keys, including Key West. So there were people who had serious home damage. Tons of people lost their cars in Wilma. And so that was pretty hard, but it wasn't just that level of devastation that this one has brought to the Lower Keys.
Yeah. Well, Nancy Klingner, I want to thank you for your report. The reporting was wonderful, and thank you for this recent update.
You're welcome.
And anyone who's spent any time in Florida knows that with standing floodwater comes hordes of mosquitoes. And the Lee County Mosquito Control District is arming itself for that onslaught. WGCU's John Davis reports the predicted mosquito outbreak spurred the district's first aerial spraying since the storm Thursday night. The goal? To tackle the adult mosquito population.
The Lee County Mosquito Control District's highest priority now is working to mitigate adult mosquito populations in areas of the county where the most residents are still dealing with standing floodwaters and power outages. Typically, mosquitoes known to carry diseases like West Nile virus and St. Louis encephalitis are known to propagate in freshwater, but Mosquito Control District Deputy Director Shelley Redevan says now those mosquito varieties can move into the county's 56,000 acres of salt marsh as well.
Where the large-scale problem for us will be the floodland areas, both salt and more inland. The salt marshes have got enough floodwater that is fresh, that the salinity has dropped enough that it can support our freshwater flood mosquitoes. And then you have large areas of floodwater mosquitoes coming, like in Bonita, North Fort Myers, and Lehigh, those areas.
Redevan says flooded roads and storm debris are hampering the agency's ground surveillance work. That, plus the cost of chemicals to kill mosquito larvae and the proximity of larvae-laden floodwaters to people's homes, makes an effective application of larvicide nearly impossible. Redevan says wearing repellent and protective clothing remain the best way to avoid mosquito bites. John Davis, WGCU News.
Officials with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention say most of the mosquitoes that hatch immediately after hurricanes like Irma are nuisance mosquitoes, as if they all aren't. Authorities say that the types of bugs that spread viruses like Zika don't normally pop up until 2 weeks to 2 months after a major storm. Dr. Beata Kansanas, is an associate professor of in USF Health's Division of Infectious Disease. She says that by using bug spray and wearing long sleeves, you can be covered against a number of viruses.
By protecting ourselves from mosquitoes, we are not just protecting ourselves from Zika, but all the mosquito-borne illnesses. And the same mosquito species carries all of those mosquito-borne diseases for us here in the state of Florida.
Dr. Kansanas also encourages people to dump out flower pots and other places where standing water might have accumulated during Irma. She says even the smallest amount of water can become a place for the bugs to lay eggs.
If you have in your backyard a lake, that's probably not as dangerous as the little water you may have in your flower pot. So really the small little bodies of water, please get rid of them.
Meanwhile, on the Atlantic coast of Florida, Palm Beach County environmental analyst Chris Reisinger says there were a lot of juvenile mosquitoes in the water even before Hurricane Irma raked the coast, and they hatched into adults just this weekend.
We've been getting a lot of calls from Loxahatchee, Jupiter Farms, Acreage areas, so we're definitely going to need to put the helicopter up as soon as possible to take care of those adults.
Palm Beach County restarted aerial mosquito spraying for nuisance mosquitoes at sundown yesterday. Reisinger again stressed the nuisance mosquitoes are not the type that carry diseases like the Zika virus. Coming up, the Naples Lions Club is setting for itself one ambitious goal, eradicating lazy eye, or amblyopia, from kids across Collier County. We'll talk with their treasurer, who's also a pediatric ophthalmologist, about how they'll do it. I'm Julie Glenn, and this is Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.